Hey, this is This Week in Self-Hosted. I'm your host, Ethan, and this week I am joined by Corey, the developer of the open source and self-hosted investment application, InvestBrain. Corey, thanks a bunch for joining me. I know we actually have a little bit to talk about when it comes to InvestBrain when we get to the software updates in this week's newsletter. So I'm going to table that and give you a little chance a little later to talk a little bit about that and give everyone an introduction for those who haven't heard of it. But I do want to jump into the news section. Similar to every week, we have a lot to go through, and I want to go ahead and get started. So, the first news article I wanted to chat a little bit about this week. There's been a lot of conversation about the Raspberry Pi 5 release in the last several weeks, and interestingly enough, another article popped up earlier this week that caught my eye. I've been aware of this Raspberry Pi 500, which or the Raspberry Pi keyboard, which is essentially a Raspberry Pi wrapped into a keyboard. So it's a little easier to use if you're trying to spin something up with a Raspberry Pi and might not have the peripherals to use it. But it sounds like they've upgraded that along with the Raspberry Pi 5. They have a Raspberry Pi 500 keyboard. And there's also a Raspberry Pi monitor now that's available to purchase for $100, which I think is really cool. Corey, I don't know. Are you a Raspberry Pi guy at all? Have you ever purchased one or used one in your infrastructure?
I have. Yeah. It's actually how I started my self-hosting journey. I had a Home Assistant. I had a Pi Hole, obviously, you know, it's in the name. I had, you know, a couple of different services running and on Raspberry Pis. And, you know, I've been a huge fan ever since. I have a couple laying around. It's funny. I'm actually thinking back to 2022 when there was that chip shortage, and when I wanted to buy a couple more Raspberry Pis, and you know, if I was able to get my hands on some more Raspberry Pis, I probably would have had more laying around right now. But yeah, this Raspberry Pi, this 500 seems really cool. I think it's really cool for education, for, you know, international folks that are trying to get into technology, into self-hosting. I think the price point is right. I think it's just about $100. For a keyboard, a full computer, full ARM-based computer. I think it's a really cool product.
Yeah, I think the Raspberry Pi marketing team hits it out of the park because I always, every time they release one, especially stuff like this, I always want it, even if I don't necessarily have an immediate use case for it. I think similar to you, I've used Raspberry Pis in the past, and I think I have like a Raspberry Pi B. I don't even remember what the naming conventions used to be because it wasn't straightforward.
Yeah.
And every once in a while I'd be like, I should do something with that. And then I'll realize it's just ancient and barely has anything in terms of like memory and processing power relative to the new ones.
Yeah.
So, but this looks really cool. Might definitely check this out.
Yeah, I saw Jeff Geerling did a video on this. He did a review on the Pi 500 and he was noticing, he took it apart. I mean, as he does. And he noticed that there was an M.2 slot on it. Like there was solder pads for it. I mean, you couldn't necessarily install it yourself. And he tried to install an M.2 slot and it didn't work out. But I think there's going to be some cool stuff. I think they're trying to do some like platforming type thing with this new product. And maybe there's going to be a second version of this or maybe an upgraded version of this that people can get their hands on.
No, oh, that's really cool. I did see that Jeff Geerling article pop up. And I remember seeing the title mentioned something about the M2 slot, but I didn't catch what that was. That's really interesting. So like they're queuing it up for maybe support in the future.
Potentially, yeah.
Sounds like. Yeah. Oh, cool. Moving on, wanted to chat a little bit about PeerTube launching a mobile application this week. For those who aren't familiar with PeerTube, it is essentially the self-hosted equivalent of YouTube, and it's also federated. So think of like Mastodon and PixelFed and Pleroma, all those federated networks can essentially speak with PeerTube instances to some degree. And so obviously it's really hard, and I know this personally just from having launched this channel last couple of months, it's hard to get people away from a platform like YouTube. And so I think mobile apps are a really big step to maybe getting people more comfortable with that. I don't think the web experience on mobile was poor for PeerTube before, but I think people are always jumping to look for those actual dedicated applications versus a web experience.
Yeah, I think native is super important if you want to build your audience, and especially for something like this where it's entertainment-based. You're not always going to be by your computer. You know, sometimes you just want to be on the train, you know, watching a video. So, I think it's a cool opportunity for them to start attracting people that are going to be mobile focused.
Yeah, it's always interesting to me. Obviously, the more open source and self-hosted projects that have mobile apps, the better. But, and I don't know, maybe as a developer, you have some input into this. It is additional work and overhead that comes along with a project, right? So now, you have your code base, but now you also have mobile applications that come along with it.
Yeah, it's really hard as a developer, unless you're using, something like React Native where there is sort of this ecosystem for building out native apps, it's really difficult. If you're using backend languages like PHP and InvestBrain is built on, there's nothing like React Native for that. So it's a really difficult challenge for a lot of self-hosted open source projects like InvestBrain.
Yeah, so kudos for PeerTube for pulling it off. I think they have both Android and iOS apps, so they're supporting both right out the gate. So awesome for
That's
them.
Awesome.
Yeah. Want to pivot to the last article we're going to talk about in the new section, and I think it's going to transition nicely into our software updates, and that is the Olama update from this week. Corey, I'm going to kick it off to you to chat a little bit about that.
Yeah, so for those that don't know, Olama is... it's an open AI API capable or compatible self-hosted version of the LLMs that you would normally get from cloud providers like OpenAI or Google Gemini or Amazon Bedrock. And so they make it possible for the self-hosted community to host, the Meta Llama LLM. They make it possible to host, a lot of those open source LLMs. And it's actually a really cool, really easy to use piece of software. And so recently they came out with this new feature called Structured Outputs, which is essentially, from a developer standpoint, allows the LLM to generate structured data. So you can output, a JSON, XML, any sort of structured data, which is important because previously, before structured outputs and before, OpenAI had this feature, you were trying to use prompt engineering to get the LLM to output structured data, which is difficult. These LLMs are non-deterministic, and sometimes you'll get it. Maybe 9 times out of 10 you'll get it, but that 1 time out of 10 you're going to end up with garbage. There might be a missing comma or might be a missing parentheses, and unfortunately that can throw off a lot of things when you're trying to deal with structured data. So the addition of this makes it even more compatible with the OpenAI API, the spec that OpenAI puts out, which makes it a drop-in replacement. Makes Olama a drop-in replacement for the OpenAI spec, which is really cool. And they're doing a lot of great work. I think they're also working on some embedding stuff, which makes it easier to find knowledge data, right? To fine-tune your AI model, right? If you're self-hosting, they're also doing some really cool stuff around function calling. So, in the InvestBrain space, right? You might be able to chat. In the future, you might be able to chat with an LLM and say, hey, I want to make a trade for this thing or put in an order for Google. I want to buy 100 of shares of Google at, $200 or whatever it is. And then it'll go and create that transaction on the back end. So really cool opportunities coming up. Those things aren't there just yet. But this team is making really great strides in moving towards parity, feature parity with OpenAI.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. I just want to make sure I understand. So from a development perspective, the structured outputs, before this update, if you were feeding prompts to Olama, you weren't guaranteed what the response or how the response was going to be structured. So how you would feed that back to your end user or your application. And so now suddenly you're guaranteed as to what sort of answer, or at least the structure of the answer can be. So you then know how to process that and then
exactly
either act on it in the program or feed it back to the end user.
Exactly. So, in most cases, if you just have a simple chat app, it doesn't matter how the data is coming back. It doesn't need to be structured, in a JSON structure or an XML structure. It could just be free text. There's no problem with taking free text. And that's how, the chat feature within InvestBrain started. But we added a feature that allowed that basically generated follow-up questions. It'll use the LLM. So you type in your question, it gives you an output, and then InvestBrain will make a second query to the LLM and say, hey, based on this question and based on this answer, what are some natural follow-up questions that a savvy investor might ask? And so those questions need to come back structured because I need to know where the first question starts, where the first question ends, where the second question starts, where the second question ends. And so that was really important in order for me to enable Olama for InvestBrain, because I needed to be able to be confident that when I got data back from that second query asking for those follow-up questions, that it came back in a JSON format. So yeah, it's, you know, when you're just asking chat sort of questions, doesn't matter what the format comes back as. But when you're seeking and when you need a specific schema to come back, this is super important.
Okay. I was actually just about to ask that because I know over the last several months, I've seen applications pick up support for AI, and it's almost always OpenAI and Olama. And I was going to ask what those projects are doing with the responses if they weren't structured, but they might not have necessarily been relying on a structured response, is what you're saying.
Yeah, if they didn't have that sort of follow-up question sort of functionality, they wouldn't have needed this. This is super important when you're using, you know, there's a lot of apps out there that are doing like classification, for example. They're taking a list of data, or maybe they're taking an Excel spreadsheet, and then they're, you know, classifying data on each row. For those types of things where you are processing structured data, this would be super critical. But if it's just a basic chat type app, you don't necessarily need this. I thought it was super important. I've actually had that follow-up, the sort of follow-up question feature from the start when we opened up this AI feature, this chat with your holdings feature. I thought it was super important to have those follow-up questions because the value of AI for me isn't necessarily that first question and answer. It's that ongoing conversation and using AI and using LLMs as a thought partner. Because, I mean, we all know this. Like, yeah. I'm not going to sit here and say that generative AI is going to be game-changing, you know, off the bat. It's still growing. It's still getting better. And as of right now, where the technology sits, you need to have a conversation with it and use it as a thought partner before it's going to get you anything valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like this is actually probably a really good transition into our software update section. We're actually going to talk a little bit about InvestBrain because you did release an update for this new Olama structured response support. So let's jump into that. And do you actually mind giving an introduction to InvestBrain? And then we can jump into some of the Olama stuff, which I feel like we've already covered a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. We were talking about before we started recording, before the show started, about where I started with InvestBrain. And it's kind of a funny story because it started as an Excel spreadsheet and you know, that migrated into a Google Sheet. And it really came down to me having to roll over a 401k from a past job and trying to figure out what I wanted to do with that money. And, you know, what stocks I wanted to invest in, and sort of being the OCD person that I am, I wanted to be able to track all of that. So I started building out a tracker. I, you know, had the quantity of what stocks I was holding and, you know, how much I was holding of it. And then, you know, I wanted to be able to track what the performance of that was over time. And so it started really small, you know, back in the day, probably 5-6 years ago now. And just, it was like a spreadsheet. And over time that evolved, I wanted to start pulling in live market data. So then I started using Google App Script, which allows you to do sort of like a JavaScript style, sort of simple scripting in order to make, you know, sort of web scraping, you know, do web scraping on, in this case, the Yahoo Finance API. So I can pull in live market data, so I can pull in dividends data. So I was also really interested in, you know, high dividend yield stocks. And there's no other portfolio manager out there that I'm aware of that will track the actual dividends that you're earning on stocks.
Sure.
They'll give you a dividend yield. So they'll tell you, you know, you're getting 2% dividends every year. But, you know, if I've only held it for half a year, I want to, you know, it just, I wanted to actually track the actual dividends I was getting.
Right.
And so kept maturing that. I mean, maturing is probably a strong word. I kept evolving that. And eventually that rolled into just a vanilla PHP app that I wrote from scratch that did basically the same thing that the app scripts were doing, but it was in PHP and I could run it in a cron job and I can kind of be a little bit more sustainable with that. And that was running on a Raspberry Pi. And you know, that worked for years. And then COVID happened and I was like, well, I have a bunch of free time here. Let's start putting some more thought into this. And so I migrated that over into a Laravel app, which was just starting to become a little bit bigger. And, you know, there was a big ecosystem coming up around it with plugins and packages, and really cool stuff was coming out with that. So I just wanted to experiment. And so moved it over to a Laravel app, and a couple months ago, I was like, well, I should probably open source this. And so that's what I did. That's what this is. So InvestBrain is really the product of 5-6 years of work, working in the back, working on a project for myself for a need that I had. And now I'm sharing it with the world, and this is what it is.
Yeah, this is great. So Corey, you reached out to me maybe a couple months ago, introduced me to InvestBrain, and it was one of those, like, I can't believe I have it. This wasn't on my radar before, because it is easily one of the niche it serves is one of the most requested, I feel like, I see in the self-hosted space. People constantly want to track their financial portfolios and investments. But that, I think that's always been hard from a development perspective, because at some point market data is involved, and then you have to think about, how do I get market data into an application? There's so many proprietary systems that you have to pay for to get up-to-date information. And so I think that's a really complex problem to solve. And so it's cool to see how mature InvestBrain is as an application where it's doing something like this. And then you and I were chatting before the recording, and I'm not going to divulge more personal information about yourself than you'd want, but it's also fascinating to me that you are neither a finance investment guy or a developer by trade, and you've put together such a cool software and application. So kudos to you for sure.
Appreciate it. Yeah. It's a hobby for sure. It's a passion project. And I think that's sometimes where your best work comes from. And so I'm super thrilled with this, and I'm super proud of the work that's done so far. And I'm really excited about what the community can bring to this. You know, part of open sourcing it was sort of to seek some validation, but also to start a community around this and get, you know, input, get a feedback from the experts in those fields, right? In the development field and in the finance field. So, which is going to benefit me selfishly, but it also benefits the community. So I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, cool. And so the release this week was picking up the Olama support, because you are now able to work with it with the structured responses.
Exactly. Yeah, this was a request I posted on Reddit a couple months ago about InvestBrain, and there was a couple comments on Reddit that, you know, folks were asking, it's the self-hosted community, it's r/self-hosted, mm-hmm. and they were looking to be able to use Olama, understandably so. And at the time, it just wasn't going to be possible. I mean, it seemed easy enough, you know, just switching an endpoint from OpenAI to, you know, your local host or whatever it is. But that structured outputs was a critical dependency. And so that got added, and it was a really easy thing to flip on and allow people to swap out that endpoint. So super happy about that one.
This is cool. Do you know, I think self-hosting AI can be intimidating for a lot of people. And I think because I think a lot of people right off the bat are looking for Chat GPT like experiences. Yeah. And there's a lot you can get from AI without quite having that level of power or complexity. The integration that InvestBrain relies on something like Olama for, do you need a lot of hardware to be able to run that behind the scenes to get what you intend your users to get from it?
Yeah. It's a fair question. And I will say that in my testing with the Olama feature, the experience is not the same. I'm self-hosting InvestBrain on an M1 Mac Mini with the base specs. And it takes a second. It takes a hot second for it to come up with a response. And then I think it runs out of tokens after a certain time if the response is going to be really big. So it's, you know, it is a different experience, but again, I'm on the base model M1 Mac Mini. So, you know, if you're on a higher spec machine, if you have a server at home that's capable of, you know, has a GPU, you know, maybe it has some Tensor cores, you know, if you have the hardware to support it, by all means. And I think in the market, the people that are running Olama probably have that already, right? The people that want this probably already have that because they know the capabilities of their hardware and they want to be able to do this themselves. So I think this is going to fill a niche. It's not going to be for everyone. The folks that are running InvestBrain on a Raspberry Pi, it's not going to work. But if you're running it on a maybe like a M3, M4 Mac Mini, or you're running it on a, you know, a machine with some GPU horsepower, it'll probably be good for you.
Okay. That's good to know. Every like couple of months, I'll look into what do I need to self-host AI? I don't host any of my own models at all. And I feel like I'm always scared because I'll always find that one person who's like, oh, if you want anything, you need like two high-end GPUs and the power bill of like a small manufacturing plant or something. So
yeah,
I'm always a little hesitant, but I forget sometimes that maybe you don't need all of the complete processing power that you think you might need for some of the capabilities people are baking into their applications.
I think Olam has done a really good job with efficiency and squeezing the most out of the hardware that it's given. And I'm always impressed, you know, with what I can do on a consumer grade base spec hardware. It's actually really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. Well, thanks for that. In the interest of keeping things moving along, I have one other piece of software I wanted to chat about, and then we can jump into new software that caught our eyes this week as well. And in the software updates, I wanted to chat a little bit about this application called Checkmate, and it's a server monitoring application. Popped up on my radar fairly recently, I think. But I just found it to be really cool. It's really simple and straightforward. And I've seen a couple other ones pop up recently and they've all been great. And so I just wanted to give this one some love and attention because I think it's really well put together. I've talked about this before. I'm a really big sucker for like great design and minimalist design. I look at this dashboard. I'm like, wow, I really like this. This is really appealing to me. And so Checkmate, with this update, introduced server infrastructure monitoring. So now you can monitor resources within your infrastructure. And they also have Docker container tracking as well, with Docker being very commonly used in the self-hosting community. So if you're in the market for something like this, definitely check Checkmate out. I think it would tick quite a few boxes for quite a few people. With that being said, I know we both have a couple pieces of software that stuck out to us in the new software section we want to chat about. So Corey, I'll kick it off to you to start.
Yeah, sure. There's a couple here that I saw that were really cool. The one that I saw was Questlog, the gamified productivity platform. Honestly, I think we all can relate to this. You know, sometimes we have those days where we just can't find the motivation to do what we need to do, even though that thing we need to do is probably just easier to do and get it over with rather than, you know, contemplating doing the thing. So I think this is a really cool idea. Basically what they've done is, you know, they're going to give you experience points for getting a task done, and you can sort of define badges for, you know, getting certain projects completed and, you know, getting, you know, more tasks completed in a day than you said you were going to do, and achieving, you know, beating your deadlines, and basically creating a game out of your day-to-day tasks that you need to do. So I can imagine that this will be super helpful for a lot of folks that, like me, sometimes struggle with getting motivated to do the things that they need to do. And so I'm probably going to check this one out and install it myself.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a really novel take on like task and project management. So yeah. I'm in the same boat. I struggle with that sometimes. So I also, that caught my eye this week as well.
Yeah, I'll plug on the Questlog one, that they have a really cool feature where they're going to allow you to import tasks from other apps, some popular ones like TickTick and Todoist. I don't use either of those apps. I use Obsidian, but I think that's pretty cool. Like, for the people that can't get stuff done sometimes, it can't be motivated, it's nice to be able to make it easy to move your tasks over.
Yeah, or maybe that's their first task within Questlog that they can gamify, get importing their existing tasks.
Exactly. Yeah, the other one I saw was Infinite OS. I thought that was really cool. You know, managing your own infrastructure essentially as a self-hoster is difficult. I think the idea behind this is it's actually, I think it's a pretty popular concept. There's other apps that are similar to this. There was one that came out last week. I think that it wasn't supposed to come out, but Linus Tech Tips was talking about his investment in HexOS and sort of, it sort of slipped out. But, you know, this space is becoming bigger where, Folks are trying to make it easier to host containers, install apps on your own infrastructure, manage your own sort of suite of software at home rather than relying on the cloud. And so this is a different take on that, but I think it's really neat. And so, yeah, I mean, managing Docker containers sometimes isn't as easy as people make it out to be. And so any tools that make it easier are welcomed.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Not something I would necessarily use, but I remember learning Docker 10 years ago when I got into this, and I remember how intimidating it was. And I remember like the refuge of Portainer and tools like that, how helpful they were. And so to see these tools kind of evolve even further beyond what Portainer's done for people deploying Docker containers, I agree. The more, the better. If it's going to get people in and self-hosting and comfortable with things like this.
Yeah. It's all better for the community. There's no reason why we should be upset about different tools, different takes on things. So I'm happy with it.
Absolutely. There were two pieces of software that caught my eye this week. The first one is Kitchen. I'm going to assume I'm pronouncing that correctly because I don't know how else you would pronounce it. And given the context, Tandoor Recipes is a really popular recipe/meal planning application that people self-host. And so this is essentially an Android companion app for Tandoor since it doesn't have its own mobile application. I know, Corey, from our conversation earlier, you're an Android guy. I'm an Android guy as well. So obviously I'm a little happy and biased towards the fact that it's Android before it was iOS. Hopefully they can get something for iOS because there are a lot of self-hosters, I think, using iPhones as well. But this is really cool. I always love to plug companion applications because it's really someone sitting down and saying, hey, I use this project that other people have put together. I find it helpful. And so I'm going to contribute in my own meaningful way rather than just spinning up another piece of software that does the same thing, but has a slightly different take on it. Again, open source projects, the more the merrier, but I really like seeing this sort of emphasis on projects. And then the second one that stuck out to me was Astro Luma. And I'm always hesitant to talk about dashboards. This is just a dashboard for services and other things because there are so many dashboards out there. And everyone always wants to share their dashboard, which I get from like an inspiration for services to host. But I often wonder, like, does anyone actually care about what is on my dashboard? But this popped up this week and I thought it looked really nice. But it's kind of like, I'll say almost like a Swiss Army knife of things because it does more than just, live as a dashboard for services. There's task management in here. You can see their productivity tools. So nothing quite gamified like we saw with Questlog just a few minutes ago. But some other cool things, some cool integrations with it. So if you're in the market for a dashboard and none of the other ones that exist are scratching that itch for you, I would definitely recommend checking out Astro Luma. I think it looks great and it has some pretty cool functionality as well. Jumping from new software into community content, which is where we'll stop then for this week. A lot of cool content as usual generated by the community. Two things I wanted to talk about. The first one was this address database. And I think this just popped up today on actually the self-hosted subreddit or even yesterday. So it's fairly fresh. It is just a database of addresses that someone has put together. It is 35 gigabytes in size if you download it in its entirety, uncompressed. And I think I'm just amazed at like the sheer magnitude of what it must take to put something like this together and compile this information. On top of the fact that I don't actually know what I should do with this information. And maybe it's more catered for developers who are trying to populate like autofill fields in their applications and don't want to use something like Google. But I thought this was really cool. I don't know if you had a chance to look at this, Corey.
I did. I actually saw this. I was thinking the same thing. I was like, who's actually going to use this? But I think it fits in the self-hosting community because the only other alternative really is to use something like the Google Maps API. If you're developing some tool that has, you know, geolocation or, you know, GIS capabilities. And so you're going to have to go to the cloud, even though you're a self-hosted tool, which doesn't make much sense. So something like this, I think it fits in this community. I don't have the creativity to see exactly where it would fit.
Yeah. And I remember reading the comment, someone was asking, I don't know if they brought up Open Maps or there's another tool that's similar. Like, what's the point of this? Why is it different? And it sounds like this database is just a little more structured when it comes to querying that address data. So I don't know, maybe it's just easier to pull like zip codes or a city versus, it sounds like, whatever someone was asking for the comparison for, maybe just kind of lumps everything together. So if this is something you need and that appeals to you, I would definitely recommend checking it out. And then the last thing I wanted to talk about this week was Fudo in the kind of the self-hosted news space this week. I'm like hesitant because I'm laughing about it. I think it's a great thing, but they dropped a 14-hour self-hosting kind of introduction to self-hosting course on YouTube. I have it linked in the newsletter, the actual YouTube videos. I think there are two of them and they're each 6 or 7 hours each, but there's also like a wiki page that I have linked here as well to go along with that. And so this is something, if you want more than just a video, you can follow along and click this link to get to it as well. Again, super cool to have resources for beginners, probably elements of this that I might have appreciated when I started self-hosting, but at the same time, a 7-hour YouTube video seems like a bit of a slog to get. And it's funny when you bring it up in the browser, there are so many chapters. It's almost pointless to have chapters. You almost can't click the individual chapters or see what's what because there's so much information. It's so dense.
Yeah.
But cool. If someone is looking for a resource for starting to self-host, hasn't quite found anything yet, I'm sure this is great. I haven't had the opportunity to go through all the content or the topics. It seems like it hits a lot of the staples, at least when I think of things that typically draw people to self-hosting software and content. So I know there, Adam Monson, who I've had on a couple times, he recently wrote a book called Steadfast Self-Hosting. So that's another option if you're looking to get into self-hosting, and maybe this might be a little bit too much for you. But again, the more the merrier when it comes to resources like this.
Yeah, I also haven't seen the actual content here. I'm seeing it for the first time, looking through the different topics there. I will say that, sometimes too much, sometimes it can be too much, and, learning bit by bit is better, especially when it's something that you're doing for fun on your own time. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, the content's there, if it's available, why not use it?
Yeah. I guess just go through it at your own pace. And honestly, as you were chatting, I was looking through the topics here. I'm like, I think I might learn a thing or two from some of these sections as well. So this will be interesting. But with that being said, I think that wraps it up for today. Corey, thanks a bunch for joining me. It's been cool hearing a little bit about InvestBrain, and I always love getting a developer's perspective on a lot of the content and topics that come through the newsletter. Obviously, I'll have links to InvestBrain in the newsletter itself. I'll also include them in the YouTube video description or the podcast description, depending on how you're digesting this content. But is there anywhere else online that people can find you if they want to connect with you? Is there like an online home, or InvestBrain, the repo or the homepage is the best place to do that?
Yeah, I would send people to the repo, to the GitHub repo. I would appreciate a star if you want to give the repo a star. But yeah, that's the best place.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks again for joining me. And thanks everyone for listening. Have a great weekend and happy self-hosting.
Thanks.